From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson, Director of Communications here at KEI. We have a great episode today, thanks to our guest, Justice Michael Kirby. Justice Kirby was a judge in Australia and was appointed to the High Court of Australia in 1996, where he served until 2009. But he didn't slow down after that. He has been teaching at various universities, and of course, he was the head of the United Nations Human Rights Council's Commission of Inquiry into Human Rights Abuses in North Korea. The commission's report, which was released almost exactly 2 years ago, February 2014, included hundreds of pages of evidence of what they called systematic, widespread, and gross human rights violations in the DPRK. I'm very honored and excited to have Justice Kirby here today to talk about the Commission of Inquiry, North Korean human rights more generally, and lots of other important issues here. So, Justice Kirby, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
As I mentioned, you've had a distinguished career in the Australian justice system, culminating in an appointment to the High Court of Australia. So how did this turn into an interest in the North Korean human rights situation, and how did you become appointed to the Commission of Inquiry?
Even before I left the judiciary, I was involved in various United Nations activities. Before I joined the High Court of Australia, I was the special representative of the Secretary General of the United Nations, Boutros-Ghali, who died in recent days. He appointed me to be his special representative in Cambodia. And I was a member of various other agency bodies during my time on the Court of Appeal before I was appointed to Australia's highest court. So I've always been a United Nations sort of person. I was a small school child in Australia when the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was established in 1948, and we were all given a copy of it. So I've lived and grown up with the United Nations, and I was proud when I was asked to chair the Commission of Inquiry on North Korea.
As I mentioned, it's now been 2 years since the Commission of Inquiry's report was first released. How do you see things? Have they changed much in those 2 years? And can you see some long-term impact?
The DPRK is a very closed society. We can't really know for sure what is going on either in the community generally or in the leadership, except insofar as we are permitted to know by the propaganda and broadcasts and media from that country. And therefore, we can't be certain. On the whole, I think the report of the Commission of Inquiry had some impact, possibly, for example, in what appears to be going on in the form of rationalization of the detention facilities in North Korea, where we found that between 80,000 and 120,000 citizens of that country were detained, effectively political and other like crimes. But it's true that not a great deal appears to have changed for the better. There is still a serious shortage of food, which is one of the most lasting impacts of the evidence on me. And there are many other abuses that are almost certainly still occurring. And therefore, what we have to ask ourselves in the international community and the United Nations is, do we just tolerate this? Do we just look away? Do we get on with something which is more likely to be fruitful of outcomes? Or is this so intolerable that as an international community, we resolve to do something about it? And I think we will answer that question that it is not tolerable, and the international community has to move things along, particularly in respect of crimes against humanity.
When your report first launched in February 2014, KCNA, the official news outlet of the DPRK, said that it was faked. It's basically an unfounded attack on North Korea, that you have some sort of vendetta against the regime. So how did you deal with this response? And how do you write off the attack? Do you try to confront it directly?
Don't forget, before I chaired the Commission of Inquiry on North Korea, I had been a judge for nearly 35 years, and therefore I was used to people not particularly liking an outcome. The nature of the judicial role is that you're bound almost daily to upset somebody. It's just part and parcel of the job. And therefore, the fact that people attack the decisions and our recommendations and our findings, that wasn't particularly surprising to me. So what did I do about it? Well, I said, which was the fact, that if you don't accept the conclusions of the Commission of Inquiry, you should go online. If you can go online, you should have a look for yourself. There on the web, is the testimony of the witnesses who gave evidence in our public hearings, and anybody who doesn't believe the conclusions that we reached can have a look at them. And if they think, as the government of North Korea said, that they are human scum, well, that wasn't the conclusion we reached. We reached the conclusion that the witnesses who came before us were decent people who were horrified with what had happened to them and were willing to take the risks of speaking up on camera in order to try to improve their country and improve the situation of human beings in their country. So that's what I say today. If you don't believe the Commission of Inquiry, fine, have a look for yourself. Google it, go online, have a look at the witnesses and reach your own conclusion on whether the horrible stories that they tell of their own lives and what they've seen and felt in North Korea are true or false.
So outside of that relatively predictable response from the DPRK itself, were there any responses that surprised you after the report was released?
I was surprised at the rather banal approach. Instead of being clever, instead of responding to my repeated requests to invite the Commission of Inquiry to go to Pyongyang, I offered, with no preconditions, to go into their country, to answer questions, to see situations which they said were different and were much better than painted in our report. And I said, if in fact I was convinced that in any way the report was unfair or unjustified, I would acknowledge that fact. But they continued their strategy. Pull down the barriers, pull up the drawbridge, have no communication, and expect that the world will accept the word and assertions of a government which, if the victims are even partly right, is horrendously oppressing its people and has been doing so for decades. And North Korea refused to allow the Commission of Inquiry into their country. It refused to allow the Special Rapporteur on Human Rights into their country. And it has so far not allowed the High Commissioner for Human Rights to go to their country. So I think the world draws the inference. They won't have these representatives of the United Nations come in, even though they're a member state of the United Nations, even though they've signed up to the treaties of the United Nations. They won't allow it because they are afraid that they would see confirmation of the raw and cruel circumstances in which the people of North Korea are forced to live.
One concern for any major international issue like the North Korean human rights situation is keeping the world's public interested and engaged. Do you see sustained public engagement now, 2 years on? Do we need another Commission of Inquiry report or something similar to keep the interest alive?
We do, in fact, see a renewed engagement 2 years on, but unhappily that's because of two recent events in DPRK. The first is the underground explosion of the fourth nuclear test, which has been claimed to have been a hydrogen bomb. And the second, following closely after that, was the launch of a rocket, a missile system, which was said to to be to put a satellite in orbit, but which anybody seeing the congruence of those two events would be reasonable to conclude is part of a ballistic missile system designed to deliver a nuclear weapon. And that is an extremely dangerous thing. It would be dangerous for any country to have such weapons, but it's particularly dangerous for North Korea, first of all, because it's an explosive country. It is a country which is performing and continues to perform extremely cruel, oppressive and totalitarian acts against its own people over many decades. But it's also a country which is executing people who are thought to fall out of favour with the leadership elite in the country. And that is a very unstable circumstance. One of the dangers that is presented by North Korea is not just that they have the fifth largest standing army in the world for a country with a population of 23, 24 million, not just the fact that they are closed off, but the fact that accidents can happen, mistakes can happen. And in a situation where there is so much oppression of so many people, there is a real risk to the region and to the world of this sort of country developing not only nuclear weapons and not only missiles, but now a submarine facility which can harass the whole Pacific and can harass its neighbouring countries, including Japan and China itself. So this is really a dangerous situation, and therefore that focuses the attention of the world. But it's probably true and inherent in your question. Has there been an ongoing interest in human rights in North Korea? I think not. I think in North Korea, the concern now is nuclear weapons, and the attention to the shocking state of human rights has diminished, and we must make sure that it is repositioned and becomes an important matter because it is interrelated to the dangers to peace and security of the weapons that North Korea has.
So I want to follow up on that because I think that that's really important, the fact that there is the nuclear issue, there's the security issue, and with the nuclear test, the missile launch in the last few weeks, people have been talking about North Korea a lot. They've been talking about, you know, tougher sanctions, thawed deployment in South Korea, taking these kind of security or hardline tacks towards North Korea. So do you see ways that we can integrate human rights into this conversation that might be helpful?
I think the greatest weapon that the United Nations has at its disposal is not on this occasion blue helmets or a renewal of the United Nations force, is not a military solution, but the greatest weapon is knowledge. The greatest weapon is information. The greatest weapon is to be able to jump the wall that divides North Korea from its neighbours and the rest of the world. And I think it's a pity, actually, that the United Nations, which is very good at organising a commission of inquiry and getting people of experience and integrity to perform the work on them, it's not so good in delivering the report after it's done. And it's rather old-fashioned in the way it does so. It has the report in hard copy and it's put on the table at the Human Rights Council. It is available online, but it's not user-friendly. And my own feeling is that one step that should be taken is to have our report published in an attractive form, have it at every airport in the world, have it so that people who are only partly interested or not even particularly interested in North Korea can pick it up and start reading about this horrendous circumstance in North Korea. Actually, our report, the one on North Korea, is, I think, very well written. It's easy to read, and it contains very powerful text from our witnesses. Having public hearings is not the usual way the UN conducts most commissions of inquiry, but it was the way we decided to conduct this commission of inquiry in order to give the dignity of a voice to the people who had fled from North Korea and allow them to speak directly to the United Nations and to the world. And throughout our report, on every page or every second page, there are indented passages of the actual voice of the people who have suffered and what they've suffered and how they've suffered and how their families have suffered and what they feel about it. And I think that really speaks very directly to the human heart. And that's why I'll be urging during this week in Washington that steps be taken urgently to get that report in every airport in the world.
Having researched the human rights situation in North Korea in great depth, and having seen North Korea's reaction to this report and to other talk about the human rights situation there, and of course with the caveat that all of these issues are extremely important, is there one particular area of human rights where you see the regime in Pyongyang maybe being willing to work on something first or work on one of these issues and then get the ball rolling on the others? Is there a place to get started here?
I think that's a good question, because if we can detect particular areas for engagement, so much the better. And that's therefore what the United Nations should be doing. It will be a matter of analysing the patterns of DPRK's dealings with the Human Rights Council. 2 years ago, they refused to agree to any human rights abuses or correction of any human rights wrongs. But then over time, they allowed that there were some matters. They also said that they would be willing to welcome a technical assistance group to come and talk to them about the principles of human rights and how they could improve their situation. So that remains the type of thing that could be done. We set ourselves a goal. If only we could reduce the detention situation. And I would think that might be something they would be willing to speak about, because although the detention centres still exist, despite their denials, and are demonstrated by satellites, they do seem to have been rationalising their detention centres, and they may have been improving them. There has been some hint that they have stopped putting in detention the families of people that they are detaining, so that it may be that there are ways in which we could engage with them over this. Religious freedom is another matter that might be possible for dialogue and discussion, but this is not something for an off-the-cuff opinion in a radio interview. This is something that requires the most careful, painstaking, and respectful conversation in order to actually improve the situation of human rights on the ground. In the end, producing a beautiful report is not good enough. What you have to do by the work of the United Nations is actually improve the human rights of the people of North Korea. So far, that has not been done, but it will happen, and everything should be put in place to try to bring it forward and to happen quickly.
I think that's a great note to end on. So, Justice Kirby, thank you so much for joining us today during your busy time here in D.C. That's all for this episode of Korean Context. Thanks very much for joining us for this great discussion with Justice Kirby. If you haven't already, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. We are coming back next week with another great episode, so we hope to see you then.